This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, Multiplying Authentic Leaders, Moving Society. I'm Adrian Groenewald, and it's an absolute pleasure being with you today. We're sitting at the office of our special leader today. I'll introduce him in a moment. For all things leadership, go to leadershipplatform.com. One word, two P's in the middle. This is a weekly leadership masterclass, and it's all about leadership. We put unique and relevant leaders on the platform, and it's for the next hour. Thank you for joining us. Our leadership masterclass is with Matthew Sporza, Mr. Doctor. He's played so many roles in his life. He's on the platform today, and I'm very excited about the conversation. Matthew, welcome to Leadership Platform.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to participate on this platform.
This is one of the few leadership platforms. We speak about the issues, but we certainly have a golden thread of leadership. I see in front of me today an activist, a trained lawyer, former premier, a former top six of the ANC, poet, businessman, master of nine languages. And I want to make the statement, in a perfect world, perhaps he would be the perfect president as well. But that's not how it works.
No.
Is it, Matthews? That's not how it works.
The world is not perfect.
How does one, I mean, become president in South Africa? The only thing you seem to have to convince is the ANC structures.
Well, if you want to be a president of the ANC, yes, you must convince the ANC structures. And of course, to look at the ANC constitution and resolutions, which all say the ANC past president will automatically be the country's president.
Yeah.
Well, when the ANC is not in power, I'm sure it will remain the same, but you won't have an ANC president in the country. It will be all on paper. That's what it is. It is a fact that one has to convince the ANC branches and also the alliances, the Women's League, the Youth League, COSATO, and many other mass democratic movements, SASCO, COSAS, they all have a voice. The thing is, they all play a role in our branches, to influence the branches.
And I guess saying one needs to convince those structures is different from saying they need to be convinced, because there's this sort of culture in the ANC that you don't promote, or what's the right word? You don't go around campaigning as such. But
that's only in theory.
That's in theory,
in practice, I know. Everybody campaigns.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Viciously.
So if I asked you the question, I think I know what the answer will be. But bear in mind, some of the questions I will share today or ask you, I also asked on Twitter what questions people would ask you. So I'll weave some of those in. But in general, it's me taking this conversation on a journey. People would ask, why did you put your name in the hat? You would say you did not, yes.
Yeah, I did not. In fact, I was very happy to continue with my businesses, which I am happy to do, my first love. I was approached by cadres of the ANC from Western Cape first, who said, well, we would like to nominate you for president. I said, what do you mean? I'm busy with business. I'm enjoying it. Of course, I was approached by others from KZN for other reasons, which I don't want to talk about on this platform now. And of course, at the end, I turned them down. But this Western Cape one was really pushing, saying to me, we are going to go ahead. You don't have to say anything. And announce that we are going to nominate you, which they did. And then it just jumped from one branch to the other in Western Cape, and now it's in the Eastern Cape, and it's all over the country. So I'm slowly beginning to accept that these cadres are serious.
So can we make it clear on this platform at least that Matthew Sporza didn't wake up one morning and say, like a Donald Trump maybe, or a Obama, and say, I want to be president, and then put his name in the hat? It doesn't happen that way.
It never happened that way in my case. I don't know what happened in other cases.
Okay.
You know, because I'm a very busy person, and I love what I'm doing, and I love with passion. My late mother always said to me, my son, you look lovely when you're out of politics. Stay in business.
But you do look lovely. I mean, you look a quick distraction. Yeah, we'll get back to the theme. You're in shape. You're serious about eating, exercising. I've seen you over the years on and off, but not for the last 2-3 years, I'm guessing. and it looks like a different man. I did see some pictures. I thought, gee whiz, he looks very thin. And in real life, let me tell the audience, the leaders out there, he does look healthy, and you are.
Well, I feel healthy because I make sure that I'm careful about what I eat. I don't take alcohol. I don't smoke. I exercise a lot, I gym a lot, until my children complain that I'm overdoing it. I must stop because I have lost a lot of weight. Since 2012 until now, 2012 I was 110 kgs. Now I'm 75.
That is incredible.
Yeah, and I feel very healthy. I always think you're as good as what you put in your mouth.
Well, a good example there. Julius Malema also started realizing he needed to do something.
He must follow his leader.
He looks very different.
He must follow his leader.
Yeah, he looks great. So back to the issue of you don't put your name in the hat, or you didn't at least. But you must, somewhere inside, you must want to. Be it from the beginning, be it by now, as the structure starts speaking. There must be a desire to want to eventually. Otherwise, it's a sort of a must-to kind of thing, and that's not good.
No, once you accept, you must stand on your 2 feet. But you must say to yourself, what do you represent? You understand? You don't just represent the ANC, but then if we all represent the ANC as such, we'll only have one candidate. It would be enough. But we've got different points of views on issues which affect the nation. I express myself freely as a South African citizen, sometimes to the disgust of others who fear the truth. I don't fear the truth. I believe as long as I tell the truth myself as it is. And very honestly, and I believe that we live in a constitutional state where the rule of law prevails. And I've witnessed in the past few years a serious erosion and violation of the Constitution by the President Zuma and by other ministers, and even by the National Assembly and certain ministers' officials as well. And you evil survives when good men and women are silent.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be silent. And I feel there are certain things that need attention and to be corrected.
Okay, we're definitely going to look at that a little bit. But before we look at you as a leader, I'm going to have a bit of a leadership conversation. We've got this hour to talk about various issues, but I certainly want the golden thread of leadership there. But before we go in that direction, just let's have an overall look at what's gone wrong. I mean, let's dissect for a moment what happened to President Zuma. I know you know him well. You've spent a lot of time with him in the past. At one stage, you were no doubt united in some way, shape, or form.
Yes.
What changed him, in your view? Of course, it's your view. Or has he always been this way? We missed it. Can we just understand this? I mean, I've interviewed him in 2011, watched him very carefully. Has something gone wrong, or was something always wrong?
You know, we have debated this with former MK soldiers and other comrades. Very seriously, we said to ourselves, we knew him in exile. I knew him before I even went to exile, because I used to go out and come in. And then for more than 43 years I've known him.
Sure.
He's a different person today. You know, we did not read, maybe let's put it positive, we read a very sweet uncle who always laughed, who always listened to us, who always accommodated. We could never associate Zuma with corruption or maladministration. He looked very ethical all the time. And in fact, that's how it appeared. And I'll come back to what I emphasize, the word appeared. But when we argue about it, we're not able to find the answer, except that someone said, guys, then he's a master of deception. And that we didn't see the other part of him, which now is dominant in his character. Of course, when you are in a liberation struggle outside in exile under those conditions, there's no money, really. There's no temptation. You don't have the power. No one wants anything from you. You know? Now he's in power. People want favors from him. He gives them those favors. You know, that's where it begins. And of course, they then corrupt him with, at the level where greed gets agitated. He responds positively to it. And then instead of fighting the corrupt, he defends the corrupt. That's the problem. I never thought you'd do that. Zuma was with us when we wrote the Constitution. We were the first 4 ANC people from exile to be sent home to start with the constitutional process in the country. We are the founding fathers, some of us, with him. We have a responsibility towards that constitution and towards the people of South Africa more than anyone else, and towards the future of our children in future. We have a responsibility. We must be a role model in upholding it and upholding our oaths of office if we are in office on the basis of that constitution. He has acted contrary to everything which is prescribed. It is very sad. It's very sad. And what makes it even sad is that at the hour of need for leadership for this country, the NEC of the ANC protected him, irrespective of all those things. It can never be acceptable, historically speaking, even now.
It's sad. It's disappointing. It's sad. It's lots of emotions.
It's sad. I mean, it's really stooping very low.
When I sat with former President Kgalema Motlanthe, who I believe you have a good relationship with, and also in a conversation like this, he mentioned a very interesting thing. The word reward reality changed. So in the past, he said a lot of these leaders did things for a different reward. It was to overcome evil or to overcome a bad system, to bring about equality. And then suddenly, now the reward reality changed. I have power, it's money, it's influence. And that whole reward reality changes personality, or it can if you are not grounded in your values, in who you really are. So that's kind of what you describe in your own words, I think.
The Romans had it quite right many years ago. That power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yes.
And that's a classical example of where we are today. When there is actually impunity in this country, there are no consequences to wrongdoing. And that atmosphere has been created artificially, but it benefits those who are corrupt. So they think they must reward themselves at the expense of the taxpayer, and they're doing it. But they reward themselves with their friends as well, and their families as well. So it goes very deep in the system. Now, corruption, we always look at other countries and say, oh, they are corrupt. Before 1994, I didn't think it would seep into our system so quickly. And it has. Yeah. And some people are soaked in it.
Let's just tell me how dire is the country's situation at the moment. How dire is it? How you know, I don't know what the description would be, but how bad are things in our country at the moment? And we can look at the ANC.
Now, let's leave the ANC for a while, the country. Because for me, it's more important than ANC or the DA or yes, another party. We on the political front, we have no leadership. The country is crying for leadership and ethical leadership. A leader or leaders will be servants, leaders. Won't serve themselves, will serve the nation, the people, protect us, protect the future of our children. That's what it's crying for and looking for. The country is looking for a reinforcement of the nation-building process and reconciliation. It's looking for strengthening of the economy. What has happened to the economy? We were 2 downgrades and negative rating, in a way, might put it that way, at the door of a 3rd downgrade. I mean, it's very serious. We're in recession. It's not me saying so, it is like that. We're in recession. Our unemployment is going high, now more than 27%. It's not going down. The crime level, according to the Minister of Intelligence, and I asked him, is getting higher in the areas of murder. The squatter camps are growing, they're not getting smaller. So in terms of housing and water and sanitation, and sanitation being so important for our people living in those conditions, we're doing bad.
Are there any good indicators? There seem to be no good indicators.
Well, let me tell you what are the good indicators. And we must give credit where it is due. We've got a lovely constitutional court, which when it pronounces itself on important matters affecting all of us, we feel comfortable.
Yeah.
We don't feel like they have ever overreached themselves on any issue.
Tick, good point.
We feel the constitutional court is good custodian of our country and therefore our rights. And what is contained in the constitution, maintaining a nation, continue to reconcile it, and having the responsibilities. The question is whether or not we fulfill those responsibilities as expected. That is the question.
Mm. The other thing is civil society.
Our civil society is very vigilant. Our media is vigilant. And they should remain like that. We should be a transparent society where access to information is the right which is respected. Because in that manner, we're able to interrogate everything and be able to unearth what is right and what is wrong. and address what is wrong, especially in the era of corruption. If there was no media, I don't know where we'll be today. You know, if there's no transparency, laws which forces people to give information, I don't know where we'll be. We'll just be, become dictators and we'll be helpless citizens. We're not. This is positive.
Yeah. But we've got a context of the globe that also seems to be in dire need of leadership, isn't it? I mean, it's not just South Africa. We've got our own brand of challenges, but the world is in a bit of a mess. There's a leadership vacuum.
Well, let's start here at home on the continent of Africa. You still have people who rule for too long, inordinately too long, you know? Even when they can no longer open their eyes and see properly or hear properly, they still want to stay in the positions of power. But again, you have got those who exceed their mandates. It's a problem. Even if you've chosen to rule for two terms, stick by it and go and stay somewhere on the farm and have peace of mind. You must be respectful and avoid despotism, you know, on the continent. It promote more democracy, more economic growth, more building our nations. But internationally, what I read, it's many shifts, left and right. If you take the United States, very much contrary to our own superficial judgment, Trump is in power. And is very, very unapologetically right-wing. And then, of course, you have developments in Britain with Brexit. I've got mixed feelings about it in a world which is very global, it went anti-global, in my view. And now they're having to sort out the mess, changing the piece of Brexit. It's not easy. It's muddy and messy for Mrs. May. You have Netherlands, which resisted the right-wing gravitation successfully. Well done to the Netherlands. And you've got France recently with Macron. I mean, people didn't give Macron that much of a chance against Le Pen. But he's got a landslide, and I think it gives comfort. So that's why I'm saying the shift is left, right, left, right. It's not in one direction. And of course, you've got Russia on the other hand, you know, fishing in troubled waters and doing what they want. And because they see everybody as being very weak and pandering. You know, the intelligence is for a particular nature which enables them to play that role in the world. But maybe you need a balance. A unipolar world would be very dangerous. You need to balance all these powers all the time. China's got this role to play, and they are what they are. But you don't hear things like we hear from America. It's a different system altogether. It's not the same system.
It's when you consider where the world is, the question begs whether we will ever go back to, in brackets, how it used to be, the so-called normal. I think this is the new normal. In many respects, the new normal is this volatility, this left and right, this unsurety, this, you know, we can bring all these words in, the speed of change. It's a new world. We can't wait for the pre-crash in 2007, let's say, or that period roundabout. The new normal is different.
It's a new world, you know, which is not like the old world. The new world in which economies are very technologically driven, and we've become very digital, and therefore, in preparing our skills to be able to relate to the new world, we should be relevant in terms of our skills. Even in South Africa, anywhere, we should really strongly promote vocational, technological skills for us to play a meaningful role in our society. One of the reasons why, and I would be telling students all over the country, they saw such high unemployment in their ranks. One of the reasons is because they don't have the skills that can impact on the technological economy. And they need to develop those skills. And we need to speak straight about it and not say the old normal, where you must have a BA or something like that. Nothing wrong with being academic, but let's be practical. Let's be real. The market of a technological economy requires digital skills. There's connectivity today. The world is like a village.
And at your age, which in today's world is still young, but it's certainly in many people's books retirement age, having said that, it's even good for you to be up to speed with all these changes. You know, social media, the power of social media. The old media, we were saying before we started our conversation today, that the print media is, I certainly don't want to be in that game. It's gone. It's falling fast. So now media is in the now.
Well, I don't read newspapers, but, you know, I was for 10 years the chairman of one of the biggest ICT companies on this continent, EOH. we grew it from 600 million to more than 9 billion. And now it's even grown more. So in that space where I was chairman, I was aware of all the business units in a technology company.
That's valuable.
I'm very comfortable with that. I read my newspapers in my hand, 1 meter or less from my face, and I'm very comfortable. I do my emails in my hand. I read them in my hand. So the world has changed, and we should not resist and lock ourselves in the museum of the old normal.
Mm. So Matthews, let me propose the kind of leader that we may need with this backdrop conversation we've had, and have a few minutes on leadership. And then we come back to our challenges in South Africa. I want to propose that we need, and we hear this bandied around a lot, authentic leaders. Okay, but I'm going to go further than that. I think an authentic leader to lead South Africa. But perhaps we need authentic leaders all over South Africa. In fact, we probably need an authentic leadership culture in our country. We are tired of empty promises. If we really look at it carefully, most politicians world over make promises, they get into power, and they hardly ever fulfill those promises. It's becoming more difficult to fulfill on those because the world is so dynamic and unpredictable. Even corporate leaders make promises to the marketplace so that their share price can benefit, but sometimes they don't deliver because the dynamics are so powerful and so unpredictable. So we need authentic leaders. We need leaders who are who they say they are, who say and live what they preach, and we can talk a lot about that. So just, I want to go down this path for a few minutes with you and ask you, supposing you agree with me that that's the kind of leader, you mentioned servant leadership, for example. I'd say it's part of authentic leadership, or authentic leadership is part of servant leadership. Tell me for a moment, what would you say are the attributes of an authentic leader that could successfully run our country? Leadership attributes. Can we unpack them one by one? 3, 4, 5 attributes that you think that leader must have to succeed in this crazy world we find ourselves in.
I think we need a leader with a good vision.
Okay, let's talk about that for a few minutes. What do you mean by that?
A leader who knows what is the roadmap he or she wants to follow in the organization or in the country. The roadmap must be very clear, with measurables,
okay.
You know, very clear. So that shows that you have a destination with your organization or with your people.
Mm.
That's what you need. A leader who with a high moral authority.
Okay. So just before we go to high moral authority, I just want to stick with a vision for a moment.
Yeah.
So why would a vision be so important? A visionary leader. So a leader with a vision, how would you describe why that is so critical?
You don't go on a journey without knowing what your destination is.
Hmm.
So a leader with a vision knows where he or she is taking the nation or a company. So you must have a vision.
And that vision must be inspiring in some way.
It
right?
must be inspiring. It must give hope. Mm. To those who are leading, whether they are shareholders or a nation, there must be hope. And you must stimulate positivity with your shareholders or with your nation.
Okay. At this stage, we have the National Development Plan, and there's this long vision statement. It's like a long poem, beautifully written. You're a poet, so you would appreciate that sort of thing. But it's so long, and it's not concise, and it's not something that you can share with a nation in the blink of an eye. There's something wrong with the vision statement in the National Development Plan. Does it make sense what I'm saying? Do you disagree, agree?
I disagree.
Okay.
I think the National Development Plan is a lovely document, and it's good that all the political parties have endorsed it except few. But there's a national feeling that it's become a document for South Africa, for defining the way forward. What is the problem is not the NDP, National Development Plan. It's the people who are supposed to implement it are not implementing it.
Mm.
It's fact.
Mm.
Yes. So we're not able to measure what has been implemented. And people begin to say, well, it looks like a lovely piece of poetry. But it's a beautiful document showing the future, and which we must embrace, but not only embrace, but implement each of the paragraphs of that plan.
So I think the plan is a great thing.
Yes.
I just think a long vision that one can't, as a leader, in any conversation you have with any audience, young or old, can right there in 1 minute sum up, this is the vision, the passionate vision of the country. You can't even memorize it so long. So it's just a silly little bugbear that I have, is that it's got to be captured into something exciting. Just the vision.
You just want to laminate it on your chest.
Yeah, you actually want it in companies on the walls, not a long...
Maybe we shouldn't be lazy, because we agree it's a good document. We should then find a way of extracting it in a digestible, readable way.
Yeah.
I think we should do that. But really, I insist that it's a good document, but it's not being implemented.
So it's something you would, as a leader, as just a businessman, certainly as president, you would support the NDP?
I will. And of course, in a very nice way of putting a question, it creates obligations to a number of role players in a society. We all have a role to play. Government has got a role to play, clearly stated there. But private sector has, and other organs of civil society have a role to play to make it work, to make the country move forward, to achieve all those objectives.
Matthews, then the second attribute of an authentic leader you mentioned now to do with morals. Just take us on that one.
Well, if you think about Nelson Mandela, for example, it's an easy example for us as South Africans. One of his strengths was that he had moral authority, and we all respected him. He inspired that respect from us because he had moral authority, And you can contrast that and say, pose the question, do we still have that? We don't.
Mm-mm.
People don't trust politicians or politics because they associate politicians and politics with corruption. So the moral authority is evaporated with Mandela departing these shores. It's a sad story, but it remains a shining example of moral authority, which became an icon to the world. So for me, that's a leader who was a moral authority.
All right, so that's your second attribute, I think a powerful one, and we certainly need that in our country. Matthew, so an authentic leader that we all need, and certainly our country needs, must have a vision. We've discussed that. Must have moral
authority.
Next principle that you would say should be an attribute?
Well, the leader must have people behind him or her. You must have followers. Otherwise, like one writer says, if you have no followers, you're not leading, you're taking a walk. So you need people to believe in you. You must be anchored within the various focus groups in your society. And they must believe in the brand you stand for and buy into that one and follow you. If they don't follow you, then you're not leading or taking a walk. Yes.
You certainly need followers, that's for
yes,
sure.
Yes.
All right. I like that one. Any other principles that would define an authentic leader for Matthews Poser?
The leader must be a servant of the people. I think for me that decides everything. You must serve the people. Serve yourself, you stop being a leader. Serve your family, your friends, you stop being a leader for me. You've got to serve the people above everything else. And it ends there. That's why you're elected to be a leader. Even if you're as a chairman of a company or a CEO, you support to serve the interests of the shareholders, not yourself or your family, friends, or whatever. You must serve the shareholder. In this state of a nation, the shareholder is the citizens. A leader must serve the interests of the citizens.
How would I practically see the president of our country serving the people? So there are philosophically ways that we would see the way he behaves and so on. Can we unpack that for a moment? How do we know this man is truly a servant of the people?
Our leader, President Zuma, is not a servant of the people. He occupies a position of someone who should be a servant of the people. He evidence is overwhelming in this country that he has been taken over by the Gupta family, allow them to raid the treasury in the manner they did. They always want to put a minister who serves them as a minister of finance with success. He appoints at the end. It's him. in the case of Nkandla, where the state resources were used to manicure his village house and homestead, you know, with fire pools and all these things, which cannot be justified from an audit point of view, he enriched himself. That's why he had to pay back money. He served himself. If you look at SAA today, the NEL, ESCOM, there's no way, SABC, there's no way where the Guptas don't have a footprint or fingerprint. But if you follow the story, they're with his son, you know, and he's quick to defend both. I would never go near defending what is apparently not correct. I would want to investigate and say, I'll investigate, I'll satisfy myself. If I found there's something wrong, I'll correct it. But he doesn't even take that precaution. He says, no. My son has got the right to do business with them. And do they have the right to loot the NEL, ESCOM, cream it off, when me and you are never even given an opportunity to compete for any of those opportunities? You don't even know about it. You just hear that something has been taken from those SOEs. Now, I've got a problem, because there are a number of ministers who should not be in that cabinet, in my view. Like Mutambi should not be there. For one reason or another, incompetence, negligence, they shouldn't be there, you know. But he keeps them. He protects them. The buck stops with the president.
The question is why he protects them. It's probably self-serving reasons, one would argue.
Well, I don't even want to stretch my mind. I think if you have common purpose, you have common purpose, you know. If the common purpose is to do what we're complaining about, then he'll protect them. You know, you stay with them because they're good roommates.
I want to get even more practical. If I was looking at a president and I was in my mind's eye seeing practically a man or a woman who serves the people, I almost get a feeling that that person would overcome bureaucracy and protocol. In other words, you get a feeling that the CEO of our country is so distanced, always in blue light brigades, never really spontaneously stops at a school, shakes hands. It's so important to protect that person is protected from being anchored in society. Does that make sense? They have a buffer between them and reality. They just hear what their advisors tell them, and they tell him what he wants to hear. How do you practically, as a president, show the nation, I'm here to serve you, I'm not there in my Eiffel on my tower?
Well, President Zuma probably say he does cuddle kids and kiss them now and then when he sees them. He's actually very good with kids. Give him credit for that. He always tell them they are wonderful and everything. But it ends there, you see. It needs to go beyond that. And the broader question you are really asking is connectivity between the leader and the masses.
Yes.
The ANC, if you ask me about that, is totally disconnected from the masses. Mm. You know? It's disconnected. The ANC is a party of the masses, the people. That's how we champion ourselves. But we've disconnected with the masses. A dramatic example of that is the last local government elections in August. It showed that it didn't matter how much we spent on an election. The people didn't want us. They don't trust us. We were disconnected. Now, the recent elections in Nutu, with all our top six walking in there and campaigning, I mean, we lost dismally. And that should be a signal that the answer is spreading of disconnectivity and people losing trust and faith in us. Mm. And therefore, in government. People don't trust government so much. They say, the point we're making, so many promises, but we don't, they say, dololo, we don't fulfill anything.
Mm.
You know, so that's the problem.
So before we step off the authentic leader attributes, any other attributes you think an authentic leader leading this nation should have?
I think a leader should always understand that they have a responsibility to protect not only the constitution, but the citizenry against crime, against corruption, against misuse of power. They have a responsibility to be active servants, protect the people from many fronts.
Okay. Protect the people, protect the good, the elderly, I would say, the poor.
And the disabled.
And the disabled, the most vulnerable of our society.
Yes. A democracy which is successful is not judged by how well it looks about outside the able. but how best it looks after the disabled, the minorities.
Mm. Matthews, do you really want a job? Let me give a silly example, and then I'll bring it back to president of the country. I think one of the big mistakes Jacob Maroja made was accepting the job as CEO of Eskom, because anyone at that stage was probably destined to fail. And, of course, his reputation suffered in the process. And there's a lot of detail around that. I spent a few hours with him. One could argue, why the heck would anyone want the job of CEO of South Africa? Because it's so dynamic and there's so many challenges. And we'll start unpacking them a little bit. You almost get a feeling one would be destined to fail.
let me tell you, I thrive on high adrenaline. Mm. I don't go back. I keep going forward. If I set myself to do something, I have no reverse gear. I'll keep going. Fact of the matter is, I won't give up on the ANC. I still believe it is a vehicle which must be strengthened and play a role in strengthening our democracy. I don't see any other party at the moment near that description. The ANC remains that party which South Africa needs to stabilize this democracy and to keep a stability in the country, that there is a stable ruling party. That's the role of the ANC. It must get its act together. I don't want to give up on South Africa. And I will never give up on the people of South Africa. People of South Africa are very well-meaning, black and white. They love their country. They understand they've got one country, one constitution, one national anthem, one flag. And they value all those things. They want a leader who will just give them hope and all those good things we're talking about.
Earlier, the thought popped in my mind and it slipped out again, but it's come back, is the conversations you've had with colleagues about what happened to President Zuma. Mm. I have, though, and I'm sure you have, seen how leaders change under the pressure of that job. I've heard how Mbeki was before he became president, how he became when he was president. We've seen President Zuma potentially change dramatically with that incredible power and that title over him. How does Matthews Poza check himself that you will not buckle under that crazy mantle that no one understands except if you've been president of the country? How sure are you that you won't change? Because you're a down-to-earth guy. You really are a down-to-earth.
I've been a premier from Mpumalanga. I was not told that I'm not linking with the people. I was called a people's premier because I related to my people. And they still yearn at me like, you know, I should come back, you know. But it's a broader question again. You see, the question is, what does power do to some people away from Matthew? If you want to see the character of a person, give them power, in some cases, give them money. And you will see their true characters. It will come out. They will either come out with that power, that money, noble and generous and dignified, or they will come abused by that money itself, or that power.
And you feel confident that you can stay upright with all of that?
Well, I shouldn't be talking about myself. I will let people to judge me, but I can tell you there's nothing that will make me steal anyone's money. I'm a businessman, very successful, if I must say it myself. I wouldn't want to go and steal the taxpayers' money when I've got my own business, even if I didn't have them. My principle would not allow me that. I've been a premier from Mpumalanga. No one has ever come back and said, during the 5 years as a premier, he stole a cent. No one. No one has said you benefited your wife or your children. But I didn't, and I will not do that in future. There's no need for that.
I believe you. I think there are some leaders that really think they can handle that kind of power. It's extraordinary. But I think you've been tested, and that's maybe the only test left for Matthews as a human being. What would you do about the race issue in our country? It was very bad at one stage in our history. It seemed to get better. It seems to be at an all-time low at the moment. So what would a president, you, do about that?
See, then one of the concerns I have as a person is that whereas we understand the platform in the Constitution that we must build a nation, we didn't write that for fun. It's because we understood we came from a difficult past. and wanted to create a national consciousness that we must build one South African nation, black and white. Like the Freedom Charter says, and our Constitution have taken that up, South Africa belongs to all who live in it. And Nelson Mandela, our former president, took up this thing very well and laid the basis for implementation of that South Africa belongs to all of us. Now, what has happened recently, we have seen a lot of manifestations of racism. You know, sometimes when racism is mentioned, people only think that it's a white person who's a racist. But the black people are racist too. We act in a manner in which I don't want them to act in my name. So for me, whether racism is black or it's white, it is racism. But these are small little things here and there, painful, I must say. But let me tell you, Adrian, leadership demands that we should not be distracted from a focal point. You understand? We should not allow a Khumalo or Sparrow to define us. They don't define us. You know, Sparrow does not define white people for me, or Khumalo does not define black people for me. They're both trash. You know, I prefer that we educate them about the new South Africa, about anti-racism, and we don't lose focus of our focus that we must build a nation, a non-racial society, a non-sexist society. Don't be distracted. But we get so distracted that we drop the ball.
We now know recently that some of this distraction is very well placed and very well planned, and we fall. We're gullible as a nation. Social media allow us to be gullible and to explode at the mention of any racism, and then we get distracted, don't we?
Yeah, but the ANC gave proper leadership on this matter many times, saying, let's not get distracted by the aberrations in our society. You know, but there's another issue, you know, again, we should talk about it in the context of what you're talking about now, of tribalism.
Yeah.
It's a scourge in Africa. It has caused wars and divided nations. People have died. There's been genocides because of tribalism. South Africans always want to deny that this is a scourge that is rearing its ugly head now and then. We must be careful. Because if we don't tame and contain tribalism in this country, where ethnicity was promoted constitutionally, we were looking for trouble. We should not wait for tribalistic tendencies to create tensions amongst us. Like, we should not allow racism to create those tensions. We must be on the guard. All these isms, racism, tribalism, must not be entertained.
All those things can lead to full-scale war.
Full-scale war, national paralysis. So we need to deal with those twins. They are twins for me. Tribalism and racism are twins.
Okay. Two quick things. Land reform, nationalization, also a big issue in our country. Just your views on that.
Well, I'm an attorney, as you know. I deal a lot with land reform. My own experience is that land reform is in a process. But there's been many settlements done. And there's no money for the government to pay for those settlements. There isn't. And then a lot of land has been returned. But what's happening? 70% of the land returned in Limpopo is lying fallow. There's no jobs, they are lost. There's no green vegetables or green lemon or mango, nothing. The jobs are lost. The food production is lost. So that's the tragedy of giving someone a piece of land without empowering them with skills to be able to deal with the land properly. Profitably create more jobs. I hear the cry for land, and the cry for land is a legitimate cry. You know, land is an asset, it's value, people must have land. But let's make sure that as we transfer land to from one person to the other, we act constitutionally, number one. Number two, respect the rule of law. Number three, make sure that whoever gets a new piece of land is able to maintain productivity, increase the jobs on that land, and make sure that they all contribute to food security. I don't think the land issue is an emotional issue. You know, I've had farmers in Piet Retief saying to me, approach the Minister of Rural Development. We want black farmers to farm large part of our farms, which we don't farm. And we'll teach them. I called him. I thought this is positive. There could be a voluntary move by farmers to do that all over the country. We don't need to threaten one another with rhetoric. We don't need to do that because we want to excite populism in politics. I don't think we need that. We need to be very mature about it and unemotional and resolve the land question in this country. But we must resolve it, which means the state must set aside, away from rhetoric, resources to settle claims which have not been paid so that the land can be transferred to those blacks to whom it belongs. And then within the constitutional framework, and say to ourselves, what remains? I listen to my argument. The state is the biggest owner of land in this country. And what is that land being used for? We could find a lot of that land going to those black people who don't have land. What does the state do with that land? Nothing. Nothing.
It's such a simple thing, but it doesn't seem to land.
No, because people want to be populist. And there's a contestation of populism using land. It's a very rhetorical issue. For me, land is not a rhetorical issue. It's pap and flesh issue. And therefore, we must address the issue of land honestly and say, yes, there's a cry and hunger for land. Give those who don't have it the land. But do it within your constitutional framework as it stands.
Okay.
But if there's a new framework, we could deal with it. But at the moment, there isn't.
Nationalization?
No, we have already many institutions we are nationalized in this country. You know, ESCOM belongs to the nation, and SAA, there are a lot of them. So it's not a...
And they're failing, in a way.
I'll come to that. It's not a swear word nationalization, but the ANC has made certain give and takes at CODESA, which, like, allowed the nationalization which is there to stay, but slowed what else could be nationalized. But that remains a part of the policy mix of any country. If you come to the SOEs, I didn't want to mix that argument so you understand me clearly. They are in a state of chaos. SAA, offer it to me for 1 cent, I won't buy it because I think it's bankrupt. SABC, I won't buy it because I think it's bankrupt. ESCOM is moving from one crisis to the other. Denel is sitting with a few Gupta monkeys they don't want.
Transnet,
the Khokhas are still going to come out. This rail thing is just the tip of the iceberg. The same thing with Prasa. 14 billion. That could be used to fund the universities in this country and have free education.
It's crazy, man.
Yes. The money you use for bailing also must be used for education. And we fund these universities which are always asking for money. The poor don't have money to pay for education. Take that money and give it to them.
So you don't go for just a blanket statement that says nationalize banks, like the EFF, I guess, nationalize the mines. It's not that simple.
Well, the EFF is entitled to what they want to say. But I think the ANC is also entitled to what we want to say. A blanket nationalization without qualification, we know what has happened in other jurisdictions. But I respect the EFF's view. It's their view. But it's not my view.
You get along with Malema. I mean, I remember you kind of defended him. He needed someone constitutionally to defend him in the ANC before he was expelled. There is a connection there. And there's no sinister connection, but there's a connection there.
I defended Malema openly when he was still a member of the ANC. I think he's a brilliant young man. And I think he should never have been expelled from the ANC.
Is that your view?
Yes, that's my view, and it's many people's view as well. I think the ANC should have approached the matter very politically, not legalistically in terms of our own constitution, and said, how do we nurture this young man? Look at the damage done by just expelling him, very mechanistically solving a problem which was political. We paid the price, and we continue to pay the price. And he is enjoying himself. He's a brilliant young leader with a future in this country.
So if you were the leader at the time, let's say the CEO of the country, you would have handled it differently?
No doubt. In the first cases of Malema, which I also defended him in, we had a suspended sentence that if he committed one of those offenses again, we'll send him to Cuba. And many NAC people don't know this. It's in writing for political education. But instead of doing that, we took another route, which was settling of scores and hurting the young man, and then expelling him. People refuse to follow suspended sentence. Maybe this must be said for the first time.
But I sat down with Julius Malema just before he was expelled, when there was some policy conference and he wasn't even allowed to go. So I spent about two and a half hours with him. Fascinating conversation. Agree fully with you. I'm fascinated by something he said. He said that President Zuma never had one-on-ones with him. He never really engaged him individually about anything, as a mature leader should. So that result came over a period of a broken down relationship. Imagine if he sat with him in a mentoring fashion, much earlier on a regular basis, realizing the potential, what could have happened. But that relationship was never there. He says he never had an individual one-on-one with President Zuma.
I don't know. I've had many endless meetings more than I can count with Zuma. He always engaged me, engaged him to different experience altogether. And of course, Malema's expression or not expression did not really turn around Zuma as such, whether or not he had one-to-ones with him. I think the matter lies in the way the Malema case was mishandled, as I'm saying. It was mishandled. It's a young man. He makes mistakes. You find political solutions to deal with that and move on. And I'm saying, for the record, there was a suspended sentence which said that if he's found again to have committed the same type of violations, he must be sent to Cuba. He should have been sent to Cuba for that period to strengthen his political consciousness if it was needed. But not to expel him. That was the wrong one.
Fascinating. The price we pay for bad leadership, my goodness. What do we do, short and long term, to curtail, shall I say, the sticking bomb of unemployment amongst our youth? It's a ticking time bomb. It's dangerous. What do we do about that? You mentioned something earlier. Can we build on that a little bit?
Let me tell you. There's one step we cannot jump in trying to deal with the issue of unemployment. It's skilling our people. And skilling them with the right skills. We've tied this in passing, and we've explained the world in which we live today, where economies have become so technological. You know, the manufacturing is mechanized, agriculture mechanized. So the manual labor is less and less having space. You need to give the young people the right skills. Do academic degrees and everything, but accept that the economy is predominantly different. The new normal of the economy is that it's been driven by technology. And your skills, you must be very digital in your approach. Some of the businesses today where we are there are only technologically driven. Are we equipped for that? We need to equip our youth with the right skills. And we must not promise them free lunches. There isn't. The road to the future for the youth is not through a limousine. It's through hard work. It's through education. And I'm coming back to that issue. We must educate. They must learn and learn and learn. And that will prepare them for the future to be able to get jobs or to create jobs.
Surely we must do something different at school education level.
We must change the curriculum. The curriculum at the moment is predominantly in favor of natural sciences. Don't mind. But we must slant it towards science, mathematics, technology. Because otherwise we stay in a museum of knowledge. You know, and we become technological immigrants. You can't. You won't survive in today's world if you're a technological immigrant.
The whole education thing, we could have a long conversation just about that. You know, we still have a teacher and a classroom full of kids. There's just something archaic about that, isn't there?
Well, it's rudimentary. It's our base, is what we know as a normal. Maybe if we gravitate towards something else, we need to not lose control of the child. The contact teaching. I still believe contact teaching is very important. Yeah, because what are the roles of teachers there in those classes? It's in parentis loco, in loco parentis. They're in the place of parents. And they during the day when the parents are doing their works, the teacher is a parent. So the parenting, even at those ages, is important. You know, you cannot parent the child behind a cellular or iPad. I don't think so.
Okay. So, last 2-3 minutes, I think we're about finished and we could go on, and appreciate your time so much. First 100 days as president, what would you do? Or is it too far away to say anything like that?
I think it's too far away. But I think the roadmap is clear for the country. There is a constitution. There is the institutions which are created under that constitution. I will try and get the national consciousness to understand that the constitution is a social contract which binds all of us, and that we should all respect that social contract, all of us, respective of race or color. I will champion that we should unite our nation and not be distracted by the aberrations amongst us. You know, that we kill isms, racism and tribalism, and we unite our people. I will argue that we need a growing economy and that we must work towards that, all of us. Because if the economy does not grow, there will be no jobs, there will be no wealth creation. The nation needs to have wealth, but we must create it by opening it up and become an investment destination for this country. We're not now. I believe that there must be zero tolerance to corruption and crime. We should all be on the forefront, having zero tolerance to corruption. We should understand that as a democracy, we must care about women and children, about the minorities, about the disabled, and that we must give hope to all the people of South Africa. Make sure that everybody feels safe, everybody has hope. It's very important we invest in the future. The past has come and gone. We should map up a clear future which gives our children, black and white, hope. No one must go to Australia or Vancouver. This is our country, we must be proud of it. But we must understand we're part of Africa. I'll make the people understand that Africa is us and we are also Africa. And that whether people come from Mozambique or Swaziland, we must respect one another. You know, whether people are black or white, we must respect one another. National respect is important.
Just very quickly, what are your chances, practically, of becoming president? Why don't you just side with either Cyril Ramaphosa or the other candidate, Dlamini Zuma? What are the chances?
It's not my choice. It's the choice of the branches of the ANC. The answer lies with them. They will determine the chances of all of us.
That's a big thing to consider.
It's not. It's too early to call.
Matthews, finally, before I ask you to give a message to leaders out there, it feels to me these days that it's part and parcel that there must be a scandal attached to a leader when they lead a nation. It's almost like a par for the course. I lead a nation, I have a scandal, I have skeletons. Are you clean?
Well, I leave it to the people to judge me. I'm not going to judge myself on whether or not I'm clean. There may be things which I do, I'm only human, which people don't like. And I accept that. You know what Aristotle says, an unexamined life is worth nothing. So let all our lives be examined, and the good and the bad about us be exposed, and then be judged whether we can lead or not. There are no angels on this planet. They are only heaven.
All right. Final message to leaders out there. If you had a massive audience now of the key leaders in our country, business and politics, social, civic, doesn't matter, education, sitting in front of you, what is a one-minute message to them?
One-minute message is, leaders must choose whether or not they want to serve or to steal from their people. And I think they must serve.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad we got to sit down.
Thank you.
And good luck with the journey. Whatever happens,
thank you.
Thank you very much. We need a unifier.
As a politician, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. So, you know, there's no room for stasis in that situation.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's Dr. Matthews Pauser. And we'll see where his future goes. Great to have him with us. Next up, our Business Masterclass with Richard Angus and the team. Do stay tuned. Cheers, everyone.
This is CliffCentral.com.